You're listening to Are We There Yet? The podcast about the intersection of sustainability, technology, and communication. I'm Sonia Ernst.
And I'm Jamie Hardy.
Please join us today as we welcome Michael Dufourneau. Michael has been the Chief Operating Officer of Killer Communications Inc. since 2018. In the past 12 years, Michael has trained more than 10,000 people on a variety of subjects, including the process communication model, public speaking, communication management, and leadership skills. Today, we will do a deep dive into what it means to create sustainable leadership while managing change that artificial intelligence and other technological advancements have on the single most important asset of any organization, humans. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're very curious to learn more about some of your experiences and some of your learnings in working with large corporations, in working in the corporate environment, when it comes to adapting to the new technologies. But before we go there, let us define what it means for you, sustainable leadership.
Whoa, what a big question. The question. Let's start by the question. For me, sustainable leadership means to be able to maintain what we call a plus-plus position, meaning a win-win position. And the leader is the enlightening leader that shows strength and vulnerability. So that's the big definition, and it's easier in theory than in practice, for sure. Being a leader myself, I want to inspire, and I want to show. I like the picture. I think you guys have seen it. It's like everywhere on the net. It's the difference between the manager and the leader, and sometimes you have the leader in the carriage, his backside, so, and it's like, how do you lead? So how do you be first there on the field to show how you would do it and see how everyone can benefit in the collective intelligence so that we get things done together.
You mentioned something I found interesting. You said plus plus.
Yeah, it comes from transaction analysis, and it's something that we use a lot because it's a map. It works as a matrix, and it's supposed to be the positions. Transactional analysis used that matrix to say that they were life positions. They are life positions in TA. The way we use it in PCM is to say that they are relational positions. It's how do I want to stand in my everyday relationships, my interpersonal relationships with everyone, actually, with my colleagues, with my N+, with the people around me. It's just, how can I stand in that plus-plus position, which means the win-win position, and avoid the win-lose position or the lose-win position or the lose-lose position, which, of course, is the worst one. And, yeah, we with PCM, we have a map of human relations, and we precisely know where we are on this map with a great efficiency, and it's observable. Because we observe human behaviors. So we can know every time, everywhere, where we are on the map. So if we are lost, we say, hey, I'm lost. How do I get back on track? Well, here's the way. So it's good to have maps. I always use that metaphor. It's for me, leading and managing and being in a relation with someone, well, we explore. And sometimes we explore unknown territories, you know, and we can get lost.
So when you think of work relationships, work environment, there are burnouts, there is toxicity in the work environment. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
I had a lot of thoughts and reflections on toxicity and a lot of experience too on what is toxic for me is not always toxic for someone else. And it's always good to take responsibility of what I feel. I think using the map correctly starts by using communication in ownership of what I feel. I think it's the most important regarding that. I'm responsible for what I feel, and no one else can know better than me if my feeling is right or not. It's so very important for toxicity. I'm responsible for what I feel. Well, my environment or whatever relation will be less toxic because I'm owning my own responsibility for what I feel, for what I do, for what I think in the relationship will avoid for me the pitfall of going down in toxicity. It's, of course, there are toxic environments. If I am in a room where there's a toxic gas around, the best thing to do is run. But if the gas came in the room so silently, so little bit by little bit, I didn't see it. And that's where burnout comes. Because there's another metaphor that we use a lot for distress and how we feel in distress and how we get used to distress. Because when it comes suddenly, it's easy to get out of it. If it comes step by step and every day I have more work and more workload and I have this relationship that's not going well, but then another one on top of it, and then that guy is talking to me that way and I don't like it, but I don't. And step by step, I am more and more in distress, and that's how burnout comes out. I didn't see it coming. It's just one day I feel exhausted, can't do it. What's happening to me? And that level of awareness takes strength. And how do I say stop? For me, communication is about knowing where it starts, distress, and knowing how to set boundaries, knowing how to set limits and clear limits with others, which is very hard.
Let's say that I'm somebody who finds myself in distress incrementally, and all of a sudden I have a realization, but I don't yet have the tools to, within myself, the resources to address it proactively. Is there something externally that I could look to, maybe a technology or some other kind of tool that could help?
Thank you. It's a great question. The first step in your question is the level of awareness that I have about my behavior. And it's so hard to be aware, as we were saying. So I believe that we do not yet have the apps to give you a good map of where you are in the distress sequence or in the distress pattern, if you are sabotaging yourself already or not. You know, there are steps, and we define those steps. I dream of one day where we have the ability to have the AI looking at you and saying, oh, look at those signals are first degree distress or second degree distress. Oh, you're in third degree distress. We have more and more apps like having a coach in your pocket and great applications like meditation, for example. Meditation applications are wonderful for people just to, hey, time to breathe, time to drink some water. Our computers are taking the lead of our well-being and comfort. And I do believe it's great, depending on how we use it, of course. Sometimes we forget those basic needs, the physiological needs. For those psychological needs, I think we have great applications that are the everyday applications that a lot of people use now, like the social networks one, that are connecting us. It's like, hey, I don't feel good. Can I have some contact from my friend? I need some recognition here. Hey, help me out. And we are social human beings, so we need others. So I believe that these social connecting apps are an amazing improvement. Again, if they are well used, because now we see that some of them take too much time for a lot of people. So I think it's also a question of measure and limits.
In some ways, they can trigger your downward spiral into burnout. And so maybe they can also help pull us out, or maybe they can help us sort of be more human in a way. And so I think what I'm trying to get at here is that they can only be used to a certain extent, and then we have to lean into the human abilities that only we have. Could you discuss some of the things that apps or AI can't really help us with that we really have to do on our own?
From what I know, I think apps nowadays already and in the very near future are going to be great help to find that awareness that we were talking about. Because it's all about awareness. Am I aware that I'm in distress? That's the first step. And that is the most important step. Being able to set up where I am on the map. Am I in distress? No, not too much. What is it that I need? If I can set that clear, now I do believe that the apps are going to be able to lead us back to the right and proper human being. Meaning maybe it's just a coach that I need. Or maybe it's a therapist that I need. Depending on my level of distress, of course. And that can be identified. Is it me sabotaging myself? Is it me needing some more power in my life? Or I just need empowerment and I need someone to push me? So that would be a coach for sure. I need to work on my sabotages and my childhood traumas or something like that. Or that would be a therapist for sure. Or maybe it's just a friend. I need a friend. I need to go out and get a bite with some friends. Works too. Mm-hmm. So I think we are right on spot where the apps can help. That's my point of view. It is just an opinion, of course. But I don't think that the applications will be able to replace that human contact and the warmth that we find in coaches or therapists or people that really listen. And when I'm saying really, I'm saying that it's sometimes just an ear that we need.
I read a piece just today about how some of the careers that we've been preparing students for, such as computer programming, data processing, for the last couple decades, that are really hot right now in universities, are actually the first ones that will be replaced by AI, and that really the skills that students need to be learning are empathy, connection, and communication. So in your view, you know, how do we sort of bring that back? And I think everybody on some level knows that this is important, but humanities and the arts are sort of less, parents don't want their kids going into those fields necessarily, even though if you take the long view, that's what's going to matter. What is your view on that sort of shift and how fast it's happening? Because we were agrarian for millenniums, and then we, for a few decades, were data obsessed, and then maybe now we've got this future ahead of us. Do you think that's actually coming, or what do you see coming next?
Inspiring question. I see so many things coming. Going back to empathy, for me, is the human side that we shall never forget, which will always make the difference with AI, being able to feel the emotions that the others feel and connect to that and respond to that. This is the greatest talent, to my point of view. Going back to your question, I believe it depends on the field and the objectives and the goal of the corporate system where you're in. We're not there yet in all of them, because most of the companies around the world have the objective first. And often I hear, oh, you know, behind the numbers, there are humans. And I dream of one day where we have humans before the numbers. And that will be a great change for many companies, I believe.
What does a human before numbers company look like to you?
It looks great. It looks human. It looks connected. It looks harmonious. That's the big point to me. It's where people can express themselves sincerely, be transparent, and connect on a genuine level, an authentic level. I've seen it a few times, and that's where I see real motivation for sure.
So talking about emotions, what we currently see with all the technological developments coming up, there is a lot of anxiety present because of unknown that artificial intelligence brings with it. How can organizations adapt to this new world and help their teams adapt to that new world that is coming?
I see the change that has been made over the last decades, and I think it's here already. I feel the anxiety that you're talking about, and overcoming that fear is very much about communication, to my point of view again. It's just, hey, let's talk about it. It's like, let's keep in mind the facts and where are we going with the facts. Anxiety is about fearing something that hasn't come yet, so we don't know. So let's talk about it, because the most of the time when we talk about it, we can diminish those fears a great deal. It is very impressive. A lot of people fear it. And I don't know, maybe I'm very optimistic, but the way I see it is as just an improvement in most of the fields where I operate. That's just having AI, and I know we use algorithms everywhere, every day in my work, and we don't even think about it. Most of the time, we don't even know about it. It's so much everywhere. And of course, fear is important, yeah, as an emotion by itself on the emotional level. What does it say? It talks about danger. Fear is about danger. So what's the danger? Is it real or not? Is my life threatened? Okay. If yes, then do something about it. If not, let's talk and see how we can arrange that and manage that fear. And most of the time, when we talk about anxiety, I mean, 90% of the time, the thing is going to diminish by itself just by expressing it.
So the one fear you mentioned is my life threatened? And considering that, oh, it's not, so then I can continue on. But what if I am afraid, I see something coming, I don't know what it is, or I know what it is and know my life will change, and there is nothing I can do about it? For example, fear of feelings. Mm. We are talking about the one thing that differentiates us from artificial intelligence, from technology, is emotion. Humans are capable, yes, of emotion that is very hard to replicate with technology. Mm-hmm. What if I, as a human, realize that the one thing that will help me survive, saying feeling, is the thing that I fear most? What do I do then?
I love that question. Fearing fear itself. It starts with pathologies when we talk about these kind of things. And I think we're going back to awareness. Where is it in my body? What do I feel? What level of emotion on a scale from 1 to 10? What do I feel? And if I want to manage it, it's like on that scale, how do I get it down? How do I keep the pressure down myself? Going back also to responsibility. If I own my feelings and I know I am having those feelings, it will be a pressure. In French, we call it a baromètre, but
Barometer,
yeah. Do you know what I mean? Barometer?
Mm-hmm.
That's what my emotions are. The barometer. It's telling me, here and now, here's what's happening for you. So me listening to that should not be a problem, ever. Because my body is giving me precious information about what's happening in the here and now. That's for emotions. Feelings are different, because feelings is my brain took over and I translated that signal already. So that's the difference between emotions and feelings. And it's important to keep that in mind, because my feelings are more coming from my brain than my body. Emotions are coming from my body to my brain. So it's just the direction is very different. But being able to connect to that and know how to respond to it and manage it and express it will make the difference. I believe that AI, to go back to AI, will be able to help in that. It will not, as you were saying, be able to feel those feelings, but help expressing them when we're aware of it, we will have, I believe, in the very near future, great applications towards that.
Another interesting aspect of that is sometimes I see people feel something or have an emotion and they cannot define it.
Yes.
They believe it is sadness or it actually is anger.
Yes. We call those racket emotions. Sometimes an emotion can hide another one. And with the behavior that the person is showing, we can identify the racket emotion. And yes, we will go back to awareness with that, because now with these kind of feelings, the racket feelings, we can help someone identify and be aware of what's happening for that person. I actually did that this morning, and it's very impressive how when we build the map of those racket feelings, we can have someone's life history go through his eyes just like that. I don't know how artificial intelligence will be able to help, but my vision is once it will be able to recognize the words, tones, gestures, postures, and facial expressions of human beings, there we will have found a key. I know, I believe from what I read that in China, they are already working on these kind of solutions.
If you consider this dynamic, how can a leader help the team navigate the change?
Going through these emotions, knowing the map. We're going back to knowing the map. If we can teach every leader, and I believe everyone, how to read those maps of human behaviors and be stronger and stronger every day on recognizing them, being more aware for myself and for others, we will give them great keys for being excellent communicators and leaders for every kind of relationship, actually. The maps are being more and more precise, and I believe that with AI, we'll have GPSs of human behaviors more than maps. We're still having navigating with maps, and AI can bring the GPS on top of that. That will be even easier. I don't know about you guys, but when I take my car, even if I know the way, I'm using the GPS. It's on all the time. And I am going, 5 miles from where I am, and I know the way, but still it's on. For human behaviors, awareness being the key, we need that GPS on all the time, just to make sure, just to be precise. It's like, oh, where is it going here? Oh, there's a traffic jam right there. I should go the other way. Today, not a good path to take. Yesterday it was, but today, I shouldn't. Knowing that before, isn't it great? It's just, hey, that person is not feeling the same way as yesterday. So you cannot communicate with that person the same way as yesterday. Understanding the human side of communication, it cannot be every day the same thing because it's moving.
So I've actually read that when you use GPS every day, even when you know where you're going, it can diminish your ability to read a physical map or even know where you are in the world.
Oh, interesting.
So I see this tool as something that can assist you in understanding a map. And then you have to kind of not use the tool and try and figure it out yourself a little bit. So how do you see this, or tools in general, sort of helping us bridge that leap to doing it ourselves? How do we remove the crutch of a tool that can help us build our own maps sustainably, you know, in the future?
Well, I love the start of a question, which is, I know I've rented a car last time when I was traveling, and I rented a car and there was no GPS in the car. I felt totally lost.
Right.
For a few minutes, I'm like, oh, back to antiquity. I'm like, oh, what's happening? So I can definitely feel your question. It happens sometimes to me. I am a map user for what we're talking about, the human relationships, and I'm supposed to be one of the greatest experts of this map. And sometimes some people, I'm like, oh, what's happening? I can't read them. it's as scary as when I got in that car with no GPS. Mm-hmm. And then it's about feeling and getting back the ability of, oh, it's okay not to know. Let it go. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's being confident enough in your own skills so that you are better when you don't have a map. I always say that to the people I teach PCM to. I'm like, hey, before PCM, you didn't know PCM and you were a good communicator already. So it's a very important question that you asked here, I think so, because it's just remembering that when we didn't have GPS, we still were able to go on the road. Sometimes it took longer, or more discussions in between couples, for example. but still, it's a great way to learn. Another point to your question is, even though I have a GPS, I know my side. I'm rebel enough to decide by myself to take the other way around, just to make sure that sometimes I feel like I know better.
Yeah, you may.
We've all experienced that. Huh? Mm-hmm. And we may or may not, because there was the traffic jam and he was right. Mm-hmm. It's an important question in terms of using maps and allowing ourselves to still be confident in us enough and dare the relationship, the authentic relationship. I think the map, and especially the one we use, is it doesn't prevent us from being authentic and therefore and go towards people. It's supposed to help communication. But you're right, sometimes those tools, those exact tools that are created to help communication and be better communicators, prevent us from being ones. Because if we rely too much on the map, we are not respecting the rapport and we are not respecting the human being in front of us. So it's a very important question.
I have two questions and I don't know which one to ask first. I'm torn. Let's start with this one. You mentioned confidence in our own ability, having confidence in own ability to communicate. Jimmy and I had a great opportunity to talk with a neuroscientist recently who does research on human brain and confidence. And one of the aspects of her research was that when we humans take action and receive a positive reinforcement, in a sense of someone tells us, you did a great job, we will tend to be more confident, even though we really didn't do a good job, but the confidence grows with reinforcement. I'm translating that in corporate world, having leaders who do not perform well because they have been trained to generate revenue no matter what the cost is. So, and I'm talking cost in humans, human emotions, human feelings, burnout and so on. So how do we know? How can I be confident in the way that I communicate? How do I know I do this well, objectively?
Very important. All the way through your question, the one word that was coming up to me was feedback, feedback, feedback. The only way we know if we are good communicators or not is the response we get from what we're sending. And that's the definition of communication. There's a sender and a receiver, and none of them is equally responsible. I mean, we never know. It's a balance, and that's how we create the rapport between someone. As you're saying, if someone is taking the lead, as a metaphor I use a lot, it's if we imagine that in every single of our relationships, we have, okay, between you and me, we have a scarf, and the scarf is figuring our relationship. So if I'm starting to pull on the scarf like crazy, you at one point might just let it go. Or hang on to it and say, hey, come on, I like this scarf. And that metaphor is very important. And I like to do it for real, like with a real scarf, you know, and just say, okay, what do you want to do with the scarf? The point is, you're responsible on your hand of a scarf. the act of communication, the art of communication, if I may say, is to know what you do with your hand of your scarf, and you're not responsible for what's on the other hand. But the feedback that the person is giving you is the most precious thing that you need to make sure you're doing good. In many cultures, as you were saying at the beginning of your question, I mean, there's the art of feedback and giving positive feedback and always positive feedback, and maybe two positive feedback from time to time. Just, oh, what a great work you did. You didn't do nothing. But I was trained on giving feedback, so I give feedback. Well, my side of the scarf is not respected. And I am not respecting the other side of the scarf, because I can't get any positive feedback from that if I'm not sending it right. So it's so important to know that the art of communicating is being sincere, being authentic, being genuine. And yes, start with the positive, but if something's wrong, you need to say it. So it's just how you want to say it and how you can say it, depending on the person you have in front of you. That's respecting the scarf.
Thank you for that, Michael. I have a sort of follow-up question. When I think of technology, how we leverage technology to communicate today, meaning we chat, we use text messages, we send emails, all of these and many other ways to communicate are delayed communication. And that gives us freedom to not respond immediately, to reflect, to think, to process, write an answer, take a moment, review, take a moment, change, and then send. So what I'm seeing is that when people communicate like that most of the time, and then suddenly have an opportunity to interact in person,
big difference. It's interesting because in my training, I'm used to not call these tools communication tools. I call them miscommunication tools. Because that's where it happens, miscommunication. It's just, oh, we missed it. Why exactly, precisely? Because of what you said at the beginning of your question, it's just the feedback is not right here, right now. By definition, communication is when I get feedback here and now. That's my way of defining it. If you want to communicate with someone, take your phone, call him. If he's not there, he's not going to answer. But if you don't have someone on the other side of the line, you know you're not communicating. And all these tools where you said there is delayed communication, well, we're not in communication. It's not possible. Because by definition, communication is the act where you send a message and it's received here and now. So for me, it's helpful to redefine communication like that and to say that all these other tools where it's delayed, they're for information. I give you the information that, okay, communication is different, is another level. It's what do you think about the information I sent you? There we're communicating. And now I can hear your feedback on it. But if I give you some information, I pretend that you can give me your thoughts and opinions on it, we are starting to miscommunicate already. So it's a very important point to my point of view.
You had mentioned, I think, five things: words, tones, postures, gestures, and facial expressions.
Yes.
And really only one of those, except maybe you could count emojis, comes through in a text.
Exactly.
So it does seem like a lot can be lost, especially as language is something that we've invented, verbal language, but facial expressions probably have been around since we started being humans.
Yeah.
So there's
why, as you said, the emojis are coming. Exactly.
Yes.
And there are more and more emojis and ways to react.
Yes, I find I actually, when I'm sending a smiley face, I have to choose which smiley face,
because
they're all a little different.
There's one I like very much. He's got glasses and he's smiling at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I had some guy, a friend of mine, calling me back and saying, Michael, I don't understand why you're sending me this emoji. It just doesn't mean nothing. And it's like, are you making fun of me?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow. even with emojis, miscommunication.
Because
it can be interpreted.
Yep.
With communication, it can also, but you can regulate right away, right now. That's the point of communication. We are getting there. Those tools are closer and closer to communication. Emojis are a good sign about that. It's just, let's add some emotion. And another sign is the three dots. You know, when you're writing, like, for example, on WhatsApp, or I don't know, maybe I'm not supposed to name any of those tools, but, well, you know those three dots. You know he's there.
Until you realize that they accidentally type something and it's just those three dots for minutes and minutes and minutes, and then they disappear. And
it's like so disappointing. You've been there too. Yeah, me too. It's just, I thought you were there. No, you're not. Yeah. So we are not communicating.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting was three dots, because that's another sign that we are getting closer to communication.
So Jamie, this is a good moment to ask the question.
It is. So actually twice so far, you've said we are not there yet.
Mm.
And the name of our podcast is Are We There Yet?
Mm-hmm.
In what ways are we there yet?
In so many ways. I don't believe that we can have a clear list or awareness of where we are actually now in terms of communication. We hear the word communication every day in so many different situations and possibilities. So yes, we are there in terms of we have never talked that much about communication and getting closer. And yes, it is getting us closer. And at the same time, we see that, well, maybe not so close. Or maybe we are, some people say we are less and less connected. I don't know. We have an application that is connecting us, and we are far away from each other, and still we are able to communicate and exchange and share and reflect on amazing things that are happening to us. So we definitely are there yet in terms of how we can connect so easily and so powerfully and so right away. Yes, we are communicating when we're doing that. I can see your facial expressions. I can hear your tones. I can hear your words. Definitely we're communicating. We are there yet on so many different levels. But I don't believe it. I don't think we are realizing it, because it became so easy. And yes, focusing on what is wrong and what is left to cover in terms of where we are now and why people are not so close finally. And I believe we are there yet in many, many different ways. At the emotional level, I believe that parents are more and more aware of what's happening to their children. They are more and more present and wanting to do the best for their children, and so that they grow in a responsible way. And I love that title.
Thank you, Michael. This was very insightful and amazing conversation. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your questions. Very inspiring too. Looking forward to reconnect with you and be able to communicate more with you.
What a lovely conversation. I love how we ended on communication and what is true communication, because you can often think that you're communicating with someone, but it doesn't land the way that you think it does. And you need that feedback, the response, to know that you are actually saying what you think you're saying and that it's being heard in the way that you think. And that's more than just using words. That's the whole package.
Yes, agreed. I also found fascinating the part of the conversation when we're talking about emotions and feelings. The one thing that differentiates us from others, from technology, from artificial intelligence, that we and only we humans can do, and yet are afraid of at the same time to acknowledge or process, and often see it as something that hinders us in being productive. That's just fascinating, this internal dilemma that we have.
Absolutely. That's a paradox I will ponder until the next time we meet.
I'm looking forward to that, Jamie.
Ciao.
Bye.
Thank you.